Mr. Chadwick, Real 20. We were talking about the mortar bomb course you had, three-inch mortar course you had in England when you were with the 1st Battalion DLI in Dortmund. You've been sent back for it. Was there a problem carrying enough ammunition if you're firing one every 2 seconds?
The problem wasn't so much carrying it, was getting it. It's got to be got to you in action. The experience doesn't come into it in wartime, but after a heavy shoot, there's always a bombing role and a counter bombardment role. Because once you kick off with mortars, as I said previously, you fire from the reverse slope of the future. So you're protected, the mortar line is. But what the enemy's got to do then is to pick up the flash by compass bearing. Get a bearing on the flashes you can see coming from that area, and you'll counter bombard. If he does get a range and line on you, the best thing you can do is move. So you've got to recognize the position and move to it.
Now, mortar crews used to be very unpopular, well, in the First World War anyway, because they'd fire from an area and then go. And the remaining troops in the area would get the counter bombardment. What was the reputation of mortar crews by this time? I mean, had that sort of stigma gone away?
Well, not because they had a different role than in the First World War, because in the modern campaign, you could send a section of mortars off to support a company. Where there's a lot of patrol work, they're a very useful weapon for warding off the enemy. If you get caught down there, totally outnumbered, as you invariably would be, and you call for mortar support and give a figure, one reference, he will start sending the confetti over, and it did chase them off.
So they were more useful?
Much more useful.
Now, we're not going too much into their use in action because we're going to come to that, obviously. Anything else you had to learn about them? The driver was in a Bren carrier, was he?
That was a motor transport, a Bren carrier. You had your drills, of course, and you got it off slick, so slick. For instance, as soon as you come into a site, it's all cases action, everybody runs off, and everybody knows respective jobs.
I mean, did they ever misfire in the sense of just not work?
Oh, yes. What you call a cook-off. And they just lope out of the barrel and might drop 20 yards in front. It's hair-raising, in actual fact. I need a very silly thing. We'll come on.
Okay. Well, so you had the 6-week course. Anything else about that course
you'd like? Nothing. I enjoyed it.
And then back to Dortmund.
Back to Dortmund and into the mortar platoon.
Were you sergeant of the mortar platoon? And what was the mortar platoon? What did it consist of? How many sections?
A captain.
Who was that?
John Arbett.
What was he like?
Oh, great. A great man. And bear in mind then, he was a very young man, younger than myself. He'd be 21. 21. A young
veteran. So who else?
You were his
platoon sergeant.
I have two sergeants under me. A platoon of mortars is 6 mortars.
All 3 inches?
All 3.2 mortars. The proper title is 3.2 Ordnance Muzzle Loading, OML.
So there's 6 of them, so 6 crews of 4?
6 crews of 4.
Anything?
Little headquarters staff. You've got your platoon of 30, 35.
And do you remember who your two sergeants were?
Oh,
Doesn't matter. They perhaps it'll pop out.
Well, Sam Donaldson was one, and Sam Foster was another.
And as you didn't have, you never have trouble fitting in. What state was the battalion in at that time? Was it in a good state, would you say?
We just received a new commanding officer.
Who was that?
Michael Hamner.
Hamner.
Have you heard of him?
Not really, no. What was he like?
Brilliant, in barracks. I never saw him with him in the field. He was absolutely out of this world. He transformed that battalion. The battalion had been without a commanding officer, as such as a lieutenant colonel, and we had Major Fanning Evans, who was second in command, who'd taken over. And he died quite recently, about 98, in North Wales. And he'd taken over from Colonel Simpson, who was the second man, ex-prisoner of war.
Was that Bobby Simpson, who'd been the commander of the 2nd Battalion?
Right. I'd taken over from Colonel Simpson, and then Michael Hamner came out, Lieutenant Colonel Hamner, to take over the battalion, and he transformed it. The standard, the discipline was red hot.
How did he do it?
He had a technique of his own. His nickname was Jake the Fake, because his name was J.C. and somehow they interpreted Jacob. But you could see, we used to watch out of his rooms, troops marching about camp, and he'd be coming up the road. And a salute they threw up, they didn't break their arms, flinging them up. And if they didn't, he used to just do, flick his finger, come here. And he always had this mannerism of the index finger and thumb when he was talking to them. My standard. That's not my standard. And he did not shoot that battalion. He put it right on his feet. When he left us in Berlin, he was promoted brigadier. He did a first class job, not a problem. He sorted. The battalion had gone down a bit. And it normally does when you get a second command. But Major Fanning Evans, with the greatest respect, was quite old then, coming to the end of his career. And he had the same impact as this Michael Hamner.
Now, where were you in Dortmund? I mean, where were the barracks? Well, or were you in camp?
West area. It was called Camp 7. Just on the outskirts of Dortmund. It's only a tram ride into the trouble spots, but we'll miss all that out. There was a lot of that. But
what do you mean? It's up to you, but what were the trouble spots? What do you mean? Sorry.
Well, I had one incident, a long chasing of this. Very serious, actually. We had quite a few drinks on the birthday. Being a bit of a Jack the Lad, I decided to go down the Barbary Coast. This is called the Barbary Coast, the communist area. And I went into it come to me, this cafe. It was totally out of bounds. So I thought,
why was it out of bounds?
Because they were communists and they were dead in their Englishmen. They hated the British soldiers, just no time for them at all. They were warned and warned not to go near it. And the proprietor was Herr Willy Gottles, a man of about 19 stone. And I walked in there, having been to a party on my own. And I realised when I got in, I was in Hell's Kitchen. I thought about it. And I asked for a drink and was refused. And there was a waiter passing by with a tray full of Spaps. So I just took two glasses off the tray. And that was his cue. So he decided he would deal with me personally. I was reasonably fit. So I got myself in a corner just like that, so nobody could come left or right. And I let fly. And I did it. Not annoyed. Pretty severe. Hell was let loose. There was loads of police in heaven. I was arrested. Probably too close to rest. Recommended for assembly of evidence.
What does that mean?
Well, try to call Marshall. Take all the details. And the lifesaver, the lifeline, I would have gone, no doubt about it. But the lifeline came from one of the married families. Giesler, his housemaid, Willie Goggles was her uncle. And she hated him. She did hate him. Thank God she did. Bobby Abdul came running up to camp, I'm in confined to my bunk now. But she wanted to give evidence for me at the summary of evidence. And I miss a lot of it. But she came up and said her Goggles had said to her Uncle Billy that he was going to take this British soldier for everything he could. It was a chance to get at the British Army, and that's what got me away with it. That it was, I was really victimised by this horrible German man. And I got a severe reprimand and carried on from him. We won't do them anymore today. There's quite a few, actually. But,
was this when you were drinking quite a lot, would you say?
I never drank quite a lot as such. What I used to do, I wasn't silly. As a matter of fact, my old friend told me to assess me. Where I got in trouble was, I would go 3 weeks without drinking if I was training. And in Germany, I did a lot of training for competitions and I'm going to know that. But as soon as, say, a boxing match was over or a swimming tournament, I had a ball. Well, I couldn't hold it as well as the lads who were drinking every night. I would try and keep up with them. And that was my downfall. We never got out of boxing. Now, immediately after that weekend, I would be out running, getting out the system again, and kick off again. And that's one of the main reasons that I'm otherwise normally later. I've never had any problems at all.
Did you ever get busted down?
Never.
What was the attitude of most of the Germans in Dortmund? Because this is before you went to Korea.
The attitude in Dortmund wasn't terribly good.
Why not?
Well, it was a real communistic area. They'd been badly bombed. They weren't too... So, there was a lot of people, Germans, we had contact with, especially girls, the lads all. A lot of them married there. But Dortmund was, you could say, a Liverpool of Germany. They didn't take kindly to the occupation at all. For instance, very quickly, we were in I forget the name of the place. This was another incident we had, but I won't worry anymore. There was a gang of us in this night. And these Germans kept jumping up and shouting, Afrique Rommel, Afrique Rommel. So So I immediately jumped up and shouted, "Athlete Montgomery." Well, I'm not going to tell you what happened there. There was about 1,000 Germans in that beer cellar, and about 6 of us. And the last of it were, we ran out, and I saw a tram empty. So two of us, Georgie D and I, jumped on this tram. And it ran straight to the depot. And when we got the depot, the German police were waiting for us. But we got away with that. We explained what had happened, and we'd had enough. We weren't standing for that rubbish, and we got away.
Did they ever attack British soldiers?
Oh, yes.
I mean, unprovokedly.
Oh, yeah, and British soldiers attacked them. Because, you know, that's why areas were put out in bombs. They used to call it the Barbary Coast. If you went down there, you were asking for trouble. The best thing was to keep away from it. And, we had there. One or two with a gun assignment, got a broken leg, kicked on the floor, knocked out and kicked. But it wasn't happening every night and every minute of the day, but it was happening too often in that Dortmund area.
Did you have to take any sidearms or any...
Oh no, it wasn't at that level. Oh no. Now, there is an incident there which was very sad. We had a young boy there at Batten, a private Thorogood. And he came up to camp that morning, and anybody coming into camp had to report to the guard room. Well, the provost sergeant then, Billy Massey, was a good friend of mine, kind chap, ex-prisoner of war, understood the other men. And this soldier came in, and he was filthy. And he was the batman to Major Listertop, later Colonel Listertop. So Billy, one of the regimental police, said, "Look at the state of this man, Sam." So he said, "What's the matter with you? He was quite a smart lad. And he was like a camp tramp. Dirty boots. That dress wasn't pressed. Scruffy. Needed a shave." So he says, "You can just go back to Major Listertop's house and report back here this afternoon, spick and span." Which he did. He came back at 3 o'clock, spick and span. He was smart about the stick. And he asked Police Sergeant Massey. The corporal said, I'll inspect you and I'll tell him you're very smart. Well, he says, "Where is Southmaster?" He said, "He's taken the SUS to the shows in S Company Lines, our company."
SUS?
Soldiers on Sentence, prisoners. They call them SUS now. He immediately proceeded to the showers to see Southmaster. Walked into the showers and opened fire with a pistol. How he didn't kill half a dozen, we'll never know. Word flew round like that. And two of us got stem wounds from the armory with a magazine. Now, to kill him was murder. So we had to be very, very careful. Well, we pinned him down into the barracks, into the ground floor, where he'd run.
He'd run from there after being in the show. Had he hit anyone in the showers?
No, looking at nobody. They were all taking hospital with shock. There was rats flying all over the place. And the corridors down below, we used to blank all the equipment down there and do a scrubbing and all this business. And he really sat down there. Well, we coaxed him. We did everything. Come out some. But we sort this out. All of a sudden, we heard a terrific bang. And he just put the pistol in his mouth. He killed himself. And as he fell, his two, the pair of boots just stuck outside the door. Now, we didn't know that he was kidding about them, so cautiously we moved down. And then we saw there was no movement, and then it wasn't a very pretty sight. So we checked everything, because when a soldier dies, you only go through his mail and throw out what shouldn't be there. I.e., you might get a married man having letters from girlfriends. Well, we destroy all that kind of stuff. We were trying to find any reason that had caused this split in his mind. He must have gone, that's lovely, lovely kid. Just went berserk. And anyway, he did when he was a funeral, which he normally didn't usually, for suicide. And we never got to the bottom of this at all. Never.
So Massey hadn't been harsh to him?
Massey was too soft to be a promoter.
So he'd just sent him back to...
Sent him back to get cleaned up.
So nothing untoward as far as Massey was concerned?
No.
Was Massey asked what he'd said? Was Massey asked how he'd be treated him? I mean, did they ask Massey?
Oh, God. As a matter of fact, Bill Massey was discharged 6 months later. He couldn't cope with it. It really sent him anywhere. You see, he went back and he got his officer's pistol. Come back to shoot everybody. And we could never have fathomed that. We never got to the bottom of that. Very sad.
Were there any other incidents like that, or trouble in the battalion?
Oh, you had trouble practically every night in the battalion. You had trouble coming in, the punch-ups, punch-up in the canteen. I mean, that's army life, really. But nothing you can't handle. Nothing you can't handle.
What were your day-to-day duties in Dortmund? I mean, what were you actually doing?
Training. Go out and do dry training with the mortars, you know, without shooting. Go through the motions.
Practicing getting off the Bren Carr and into...
Getting into the position. I take the NCOs off and work with the mortar plotters. See if I could work out a range in line on said targets. And all that kind of stuff. Selling more grenades.
What were they like?
A good selling one. Dortmund will always be remembered. For the presentation of colours, which was the biggest parade we did, and incidentally, Albert Shepherd was the bugle major, his first role as bugle major for that parade, and he did a first class parade on that one. The other big event was the NATO exercises, the first NATO exercise he ever had been taken, which ended in tragedy.
Tell me about the exercises. What were you meant to be doing?
Well, the exercises were of the massive proportions. British, American, French, Belgian, everybody took part. And the Defence Minister was Manuel Shinwell, old Manny Shinwell. And we went out there, and of course, on massive exercises like that, you really don't know what's going on. You're following the band. But it ended in a little tragedy. And we used to train at Bowles and in Sunny Lager. Now there with it, Sunny Lager is where they trained the Africa Corps. It was equivalent to all Dartmoor. You had a massive area. What happened? There was a lot of night movement and you were meant to go long hours without sleep because you expected accidents. You expected the odd fatal accident. But what happened was a real tragedy. Some Americans had bivouacked in an area, and then the lines were crossed somewhere along the line. The armour was called forward and ran over them while they were in bed. So the whole manoeuvres were stopped, and we all returned. We'd been there quite a few weeks, of course. But we trained at Sunny Lager and we trained at Vogelsang, that was near the Belgian border. Very, very big exercises. Added to that, He had a very big social life.
Was there an you said before that in Germany there was an accident with a mortar. Was this trip in in Germany or the next trip?
Berlin.
That's the next trip. Right. Because that's after you came back from Korea, isn't it?
Oh, no. No, before Korea. We're still in Dortmund.
Right.
We go from Dortmund to Berlin.
Sorry, I thought, yeah. So, tell me about the social life then.
Great. Fantastic. One word sums it up. Wonderful social life. Between the messes. The fraternization ban was all finished then, of course. So they brought the German girlfriends to the mess. The married families had joined us. You had dances, regimental balls, other regiments. You visited, you went to their balls. You worked hard and played hard. That's the best way to do something.
What was the sergeant's mess like at that time? What was it in? Was it in a hut or?
Oh, the German village barracks were first class. You had wonderful buildings, a dance hall, beautiful accommodation, massive bar, carpeted top to bottom. Oh, nothing spared. Absolutely first class.
And tell me about the sergeant's mess. Who were the characters in the sergeant's mess in Dortmund?
That would be the Lord of them. Well, Rasmussen, a great character, Ras. I think he was a sergeant in 19 years. Brilliant man, actually. It was quite characters. And of course, the RSM members. Harry Thompson. It's probably something to say, but it's well known in the regiment, so I might as well put it in. Harry had no campaign stars. He'd never been anywhere. And when Brigadier Hamner arrived, he told him he was no use to him as an RSM without medals. He broke his heart. Harry, I'm going to he went, and we got then Arison Thomason, my old Arison from the 16th, Ted Thomason. But we had everything going. There was sport, there was social life, good food. It was a wonderful life.
What about the sport, the swimming and boxing? Tell us about that.
Yeah, not so much in boxing. We had regimental competitions for boxing in Dortmund, which obviously I took part in. Berlin, we did pretty well in sport. Quite well indeed. And my the battalion did extremely well.
When did you move to Berlin?
Very early 50, I think it was about January, February 1950.
And whereabouts in Berlin did you go?
We went to Weber Barracks in Spandau. And of course, one of our main tasks there was to guard Spandau Prison, where Rudolf Hess and Admiral Rader were.
Did you ever do guard duties there?
Yes, we did 3 months. The British did 3 months, the French, the Ruskies, and the Americans. We all did a 3 month guard stretch on Spandau Prison. And well, that's the reason that the Russians were never open. Would never let us out because it was their only access to West Berlin, and that's why he was kept in all them years. One of the main reasons.
So, who was there anyone else other than Hess and Ryder in there?
Well, there's quite a few top notches, I forget them now, but Hess and Ryder were the two main ones.
Did you meet them?
Some. You should take a phone in. I didn't. The lads did. So they carried the phone into them. And he used to come out there. He used to get a garden door. He used to hold the garden for about 15 minutes and then go back. That was his daily exercise routine.